many seats do you have on the plane, bitch?
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's October 15, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 139.
This is No Agenda.
Awakening the masses so they don't become extras in Zombieland 2. And coming to you from the minimum security containment cell in Gitmo Nation West, San Francisco, California. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where it's not supposed to be raining, but indeed it is, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
It was a horrible storm, and I didn't witness one bit of it.
Well, you know, it wasn't that bad around here. That's the joke of it.
Oh, San Francisco, in the city itself, people said it was almost spooky.
They're wimps.
Yeah, of course they're wimps.
There was like less than an inch of rain in San Francisco. There was 14 inches in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Yeah, it's funny.
That's where all the action was.
No, but there's a lot happened, John. We had snow in, I think, Utah, Minnesota. There's snow on the mountains of Hawaii. Is that normal?
Well, it's global warming. What can I say?
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. And Chicago, where I was for a couple days, oh, man, it got so cold. Of course, Chicago is known for getting cold.
Not this time of year.
But it was, we only looked at Celsius temperatures, but it was below freezing. So that would be below 32 degrees Fahrenheit overnight. And of course, you get that wind off of Lake Michigan. It's like, okay.
The wind should be going the other way. So,
wait. I got news. I got big news.
All right. Oh, by the way, before you start, I want to mention that our producer, executive producer today, is Timothy Tillman.
Hey, Timothy.
From Midlothian, Virginia. Timothy Tillman, executive producer of the No Agenda podcast this week.
Episode 139. Timothy is the executive producer.
You put it on your resume.
Yes. And it will help you get jobs.
And we'll vouch.
Absolutely. We'll sign anything you send us. Happily. Now, so we came back, John, and guess what? We have twins!
Oh, really?
Yeah, they hatched. The pigeons hatched.
Okay, now let's go. Did you take pictures?
Yeah, there's there will be a picture in today's show notes. There's a picture on Mickey's Facebook page.
You have a picture of the baby pigeons because this was the debate. This one guy came over to your place and said, there's people have noticed, and this is legendary, that no one's ever seen a baby pigeon.
Yeah, well, so for people who haven't followed along for the past 4 or 5 months, these two pigeons keep coming back roosting in this windowsill ledge, which is right off the deck of the back of the containment cell here. And every single time it's gone wrong, either we've had crows take the eggs or they've fallen down to the ground or a combination thereof. And I think it was...
I think you've even killed one of the eggs.
No, I didn't kill the egg, but there was a crow had the egg in his mouth and I went, shoo, and then he dropped the egg on the ground. So technically it was a lose-lose situation anyway. But I did hear, and I think this is what is different from this time, that the city of San Francisco spreads out pigeon feed that includes some chemical that makes them sterile. Because, of course, they don't really want a whole bunch of pigeons flying around the city, which I can, you know, there's already enough of them. So I can kind of understand that, but it's also like, eh. So what I did is every single morning, whenever there were, with this last batch of two eggs, I would take some either muesli or granola and I'd throw it out on the ledge and these...
So wait, you're now admitting to being one of those horrible people who feeds
yes,
pigeons.
Yeah. No, but John, it was for science.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, they really like the raisin muesli, apparently. That's much better for them. And I really got into a good relationship with Ginger, because it's Fred and Ginger, of course. They like the muesli better.
Did you check to make sure it didn't have any high fructose corn syrup?
No. It's completely organic.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But I had such a good relationship with her, I could actually throw the stuff onto the ledge while she was sitting there and on her head, and she wouldn't care, right? So we come back yesterday from Chicago, and I look out, and the broken eggshells are still, one of them is actually still attached to one of these two chicks. I guess they're chicks, right? Pigeon chicks?
I guess.
Or pigelets?
Pidgelings.
Pidgelings.
Pidgets.
And she literally shows them off to us. She's like, here. And she leans back and like, here, looky what I got here. And then she covers them up again. And this morning I gave her some more. Actually,
you'd be joining PETA.
Yeah, Christina wouldn't let me. Christina's like, "Hey, man, don't give them the muesli. That's good shit, man. I want to eat the muesli." So I gave them some other stuff. I don't know.
Gave some Rice Krispies.
Yeah, Rice Krispie treats for everyone. And she got off the nest to go and eat it, and went back, and we got some fantastic pictures. I have to say, they're cute.
And within, okay, well, at least now we know we can put this on Wikipedia.
Yeah,
this takes care of the legend that no one's ever seen a baby pigeon.
Well, we have two, and we will be documenting their growth
until a red-tailed hawk comes around and just eats them live.
Well, we have a roster. Who's going to be watching out? Anyway, a couple things from my travels before we really get into the meat of the show. First of all, traveling in America is not fun anymore.
It hasn't been fun for almost a decade.
It's really, really diminished. I mean, all the way from you get to the airport, and we flew United. And we flew coach, which was still Chicago, San Francisco, Chicago coach round trip. Each ticket was $600. And that's, what the frick is that?
It's high.
It's very high. And it's just, United has this priority check-in, which you can add another $49 per ticket, and then you can get into a faster line. It's like, what the hell is that? Which, by the way, didn't go any faster than the regular line. You can upgrade.
There you have it.
You used to be able to select a seat that was near an exit. Those, of course, now are for sale. And when you walk into the plane, it's all freaking midgets who are sitting there, who book their tickets a year in advance and lock up all the premium seats, because that's now a premium seat. Is that, an exit row used to be like, well, you have to adhere to all these, can you speak English and are you able to open up the window? Now it's like, hey, you got $50? You can have an exit seat.
That's about right.
And then you pay extra for your baggage, which, I don't know, I guess I didn't realize that's what was going on. You buy your ticket, and then when you check in, if you actually have a bag with you, then you have to pay $20 a bag.
It seems to me as though this is all leading to one obviosity, which is to fly you around by the pound.
Oh, you know what? I'd be okay with that.
Well, you probably weigh enough to. You probably would be the median. In other words, typical, you'd probably pay right around the 600 mark. And then they get these, people that are extremely large that would have to pay even more. And then there's this, the skinny little people could probably get in on a discount.
Well, here's the thing that really bothers.
Because it does make a difference to them. I mean, it's part of the cost of the flight.
Of course, every pound is noted on the spreadsheet. It's extremely important. But the thing that this does, this paying for $20 for baggage, which, and I'm okay. Again, I'm okay with it if it's really by weight. There's a lot of reasons to say okay, because it does cost a heavier person. It costs more to transport them in aviation. It's all done by weight and balance. But of course, what this does is it forces people to bring on these overseas shipping containers on wheels. And it's just a nightmare what goes on with people trying to jam this shit into overhead bins. And then, of course, it's completely filled to the nook and cranny, and people, finally get them closed. And then some other dickhead comes along and is like, oh, I think I will open this one. And then, it falls on people's heads. And it's like, it's a nightmare. It's so stupid. And I don't, why do they allow people to bring on these huge suitcases?
You're not supposed to bring on a suitcase that big. I mean, I carry a hard case, which is designed specifically, and I do it for the specific reason that I know it'll fit in those bins. But these people, they buy these things, they will fit in the bin if they're empty, but then they stuff them full of so much stuff.
Yeah.
And so the thing is bulging. And then they slam it up, or some people do the same thing with a garment bag, even though not too many people travel with those anymore, but some people do. And then they can't get the thing in, and they're pushing and pushing and pushing, and then the woman comes along.
She helps push.
She's pushing, and they're pushing, and then they got tricks to kind of cock the thing so it kind of opens a little wider, and they finally get it in there. And then when the plane exits, you have to wait for this guy to try to get this thing out.
But, you know, it's like they even say, please put your lighter items in the overhead bin, which, you know, they're not luggage storage. They're for, like, your coat, your laptop bag, you know, some small things. And I have a nice coat, and I fold my coat. I put it up there. I've got my laptop bag. I put it up there, and I'm done, you know. And then some douchebag comes along with boom, 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 boom. It's like, dude, you know, that's like my coat in there. That's like my shit. And you're just like ramming it like a jackhammer.
Tough toenails, kid.
You know, and all the while, and so the air conditioning unit was on like sub-zero temperatures above three rows, because of course we were on a 777, which means you get, why do they make five seats next to each other? Five seats. It's the most inconvenient thing in the world. If you have an aisle seat, you're going to be standing up throughout the entire flight to let at least two other people go to the restroom. And so, you know, we kept saying, could you please, you know, control the air conditioning, because we're really freezing. You know, like, here, feel my legs. They're blocks of ice. And these people, the flight attendants on United, who are just dickheads and ugly, they just, all they're concerned
about. And you're ugly,
too. Yeah. All they're concerned about is, turn off your cell phone. Turn off your electronic devices. Turn off your cell phone. Turn off So could you please, whoever controls the air conditioning, could you please change it just a little bit? Turn it up a little bit. Turn off your cell phone, man. That's all they talk about. And then, oh, we have breakfast, which, by the way, the food you buy is a box of chemicals. And by the time they get to row 43, I'm sorry, we're out of breakfast. How many seats do you have on the plane, bitch?
Use that as a starter.
Yeah. Let me mark it. That's a good one. And I had some fun at the TSA as well. I just couldn't help myself.
Go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, so the thing that bugs me is there's no consistency. So there were two new things in Chicago on our way back. The new one was...
By the way, just to interrupt you for a second, I do want to mention that there is no consistency. If you look at the TSA website, because I fly with my daughter every so often. She's under 18. Mm-hmm. If you read the TSA website, children flying with their parents don't need any ID whatsoever.
Right.
Try to pull that out. It says it on the website. It says the TSA policy. Try to get your daughter on an airplane with no ID and see what happens.
Oh, well, so the consistency. Well, first let me start. At every airport, before you get to TSA, they have the local airport rent-a-cop, which is one step above janitor. And nothing against janitors, but, you know, you get a uniform with a sewn-on, like, security patch. And their only job is to check and see you have a boarding card, right? They have no legal right to look at your identification. Their only job is to make sure you don't get into line without a boarding card. I'm okay with that. But the arrogance and the way they look at you and the way they speak to you, and then, you know, so on the way over, the woman, like,
boarding card.
I'm like, and what happens with me is I just can't help. I remain friendly, but I got it loud. You know, I'm like, good morning, how are you? And then that always kind of freaks him out. And then she's like grabbing my boarding card. Okay, that's good. Thank you. You know, I just can't help it. I just have to. And I figure if anyone says, what the fuck is wrong with you? I'll say, oh, sorry, I'm hard of hearing or something. You know, I can pull it off.
What?
But, you know, it's like it's so unfriendly. It's so unfriendly.
My favorite thing is recently they've taken up when you go into the line, there's the beginning, they have the boarding card and ID guy. And so they, in different airports, again, it's inconsistent, but Seattle always had, they have, for one thing, they got a little ultraviolet light.
Yeah, they shine it on your paperwork card,
like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And so they're shining the light on the card, and then the guys in Seattle typically hold the card up into the air next to your, so it's like matches next to your face, and they move it up forward and back as though they're like Monet
and they're looking at you like they have some facial recognition, looking
at the picture, and they're going back and forth and back and forth, like, you know.
So here's the inconsistency. So in Chicago, and of course these instructions are yelled at you. So usually it's take your laptop out of the bag, and I have a one of those crumple bags. So it's just the laptop, and it has its own little encasement, nothing else. So it's, you know, it's, and I just carry that in my under my arm because I don't want to be taking shit out of a bag, and just make it easy for me, whatever. So you normally, it's like, take all laptops, all electronics, put them in the bin. And and then you have to put your shoes. You have to take your shoes off. But the new one here was, do not put your shoes in the bin. Shoes have to be on the belt by themselves. I'm like, wow.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, wow, okay. So I just let that go. So I'm like, okay, I'll put my Uggs, because of course I travel with the easiest shoes to take off. I'll put them on the belt. I have a scarf, like a, you know, just a gray scarf, and everything's off. I'm, you know, my pants are falling down. I've got nothing on except this scarf. And the guy says, take off your scarf, sir. And that's what I'm like, doesn't the x-ray machine show that there's nothing in the scarf? No, we have to see you have nothing underneath. Okay, so I'm like, all right, I begrudgingly do that. And then as my stuff comes out on the other side, and there's one bin with my laptop on top of the rubber casing, you know, it's just a little protection bag. The guy says, you know, you don't have to take that out of the bag. I'm like, oh, really, Agent White? Well, please come to every other airport I've been through where I've been bawled out for not taking it out. That's not true. I'm like, okay. You know,
that's not true.
And then they're like,
he would know.
Please
they've
take
been
your
following you.
And please take your bins off of the belt. We need to move along. Like, where am I going to redress, sir? There's like one bench where two people can sit on, and there's 30 people in the queue. It's just, so anyway, what I'm building up to is my entire frustration of being treated like an idiotic slave. And when you really sit and drink a coffee at the airport and watch people, they have become zombies. And all the while, the soundtrack is, current threat level is orange. Please be very vigilant. Do not let go of your luggage. Please maintain your luggage at all times. It's like that shit has influence on your psyche, you know? It really does. And people are walking around like zombies, John. And no one's friendly. No one says thank you or please or whatever. And it's just...
Now, well, you wonder why Chicago lost the bid for the Olympics.
Yeah, well, it's not just Chicago. It's the airport experience in general. And America used to be ridiculed in a funny sort of way by the Europeans when I was growing up in Gitmo Nation East. Oh, America's so fake with your have a nice day and how are you doing? And I'd always defend that and say, you know, that's not true. People, Americans generally just mean that. Don't read anything into it. They actually mean, how you doing? Or have a nice day. And it's a part of service. And service is service with a smile. But now, even the people who say this are like, hi, how you doing? Have a nice day. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. They've become zombified. Completely zombified. And I'm...
Well, that's why these movies are out.
Exactly. Exactly. And even in my intro, I said it, you know, I saw Zombieland, which is a fantastic movie if you like gratuitous killing of zombies.
And who doesn't?
And let's face it. But I think there was a very deep psychological metaphor in there that the filmmakers were trying to portray. And they're right. We have just become a nation of zombies, at least in these open spaces. Where people come together and there's just no human interaction whatsoever. It really saddens me. And
yeah, the government has done what it has to do to dehumanize the entire population of the United States. For
and it's worked. It's freaking worked.
Mm. Well, it doesn't take that much.
So anyway, while I was in Chicago, I had a quick walk around. Wanted to show Mickey... you know, some, you know, like the loop and stuff. And I bumped into something rather interesting, and I did a little bit of research on it, although I don't know if it really means that much, if we can read too much into it, but it was just kind of fun to see. I saw a plaque on one of the bridges, and I forget which one offhand, but it's not that relevant, which was a plaque from 1687 or something, and talked about Norwegian sailors coming over to Chicago. And so I started Googling a little bit about, you know, I basically did Google searches on the Norway-Chicago connection, of course thinking that, hey, maybe there's a deeper meaning behind the Norwegians. Not the Swedes, it was the Norwegian... five Norwegian politicians who essentially choose the Nobel Peace Prize. There was a huge Norwegian community in Chicago. And did you know that 55 of the big bridges in Chicago were built by Norwegians?
Okay.
And there's a
lot of Norwegians in that whole area, Minnesota, Chicago, Wisconsin.
Right, right. But I just thought, you know, and there's still, to this day, shipping contracts, and there's all kinds of stuff going back and forth between Norway and Chicago. And I just thought it was interesting that there may be a little more connection there between Chicago specifically and Norway. And I wonder,
you never know with Chicago.
So there's a couple of links that I'll put into the show notes at noagendashow.com. Where you can read about the Norwegian community, all the work they did on the bridges, which, face it, is a big part of the Chicago infrastructure. And 55 bridges is, you know, that's not just a little. And there's a lot of, I guess it's Lutheran churches in Chicago that the Norwegians built. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that there may be a little deeper connection there.
Well, let's get back to this dehumanizing theme. I think this is a good one for us.
Okay, sure.
Well, which brings me to one of my clips.
Mm. Excellent.
And first, I want to mention this clip. I promise I'd never dug up, and I've got to dig it up because it's still valid and it'll still be good to listen to. Which is Shepard Smith berating on Fox.
Wait a minute.
Berating a nurse who wasn't going to take the swine flu shot, and he essentially berated her for pretending that she knows more than the CDC knows, because the CDC knows more than she does. She doesn't know anything. And the fact that she would come on the show and go, and it just was unbelievable to listen to this thing, because it was just like,
did you send me this clip, John?
The clip that you have two clips, right?
Yeah.
It's the one that's not the PPOD.
O'Reilly Dick?
Anyway, so Smith goes on and on, and so I've thought, well, that was just an anomaly. Shepard Smith's a dick, you know. There's all these different possibilities, or you know, she went off script, or who knows what. And I didn't think it was going to be thematic. Then O'Reilly comes on this show. This was this last week, and now it's not that this woman doesn't need berating, but the idea that you bring somebody on who has, you know, that all you're going to do is berate her because she is not the government, and the government knows best.
Everything.
I didn't know that Fox had gotten into this mode of the government knows best, which is somewhat sick, because the government doesn't know best. But the government knows best, or the generals know best, and, you know, I mean, you know, anyone who's been through the Vietnam War the scene knows that was bogus. But no, that's okay. So I want you to play. This is a little long. You're going to have to interrupt it a couple of times. But this is O'Reilly attacking a Code Pink woman, one of the co-founders or something. And she was actually quite pleasant for a Code Pink woman. She just came on to say what she wanted to say. And he just not only ridiculed her, but then laughed at her. And I found it abhorrent.
Americans who want out of Afghanistan, even though there's no question the terrorists would move in. Joining us now from Washington, Medea Benjamin, leader of Code Pink, committed anti-war group. And Ms. Benjamin is just back from Afghanistan. So just define for everybody your exact position on the war over there.
We don't think sending 40,000 more troops is the answer. We think there is no military solution. And in fact, we think the presence of U.S. troops is the best recruiting tool that the Taliban has. We were told about 30% of people who join the Taliban join because they've been harmed by foreign forces. And the other 70% join because they're poor. So I think we'd be a lot better off saving the lives of our soldiers and the money of our tax dollars if we provided financial incentives for people not to join the Taliban. And we have an exit strategy, and let the Afghan military and the Afghan police be trained by the UN and promote peace talks.
Before we even let O'Reilly go further, it baffles me how the talk has shifted to the Taliban, how we were supposed to be there for one reason and one reason only, which was to catch Osama bin Laden. Okay, you can tack on your phantom Al-Qaeda if you want, But the entire conversation has shifted to the Taliban, and no one's even questioning that.
Now, this is like the shift from healthcare reform to healthcare insurance reform.
Yeah, yeah.
You just slip in, you just slipstream the argument. So you were talking about one thing 1 minute, the next thing you know, we got to stop the Taliban. All and right. By the way, there's
now,
references.
Let me just run. Oops,
I'm sorry.
So Medea Benjamin feels that she, you, know more about winning a war than General McChrystal.
Well, yeah, he doesn't seem to be winning it, does he? Jeez.
I don't know, Medea, if that's going to fly. See, McChrystal thinks he can win, and he's the expert general, and you're a civilian, but you say you know more than him.
Well, I'm absolutely certain that more troops is not the answer.
He's certain that more troops is the answer. So I'm saying, why should I take you, with all due respect, your expertise over McChrystal's expertise?
You fool. You're a slave. You need to shut up, woman. Shut up and sit down. What do you know?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Just in response to this, first of all, I don't know what wars McChrystal has won. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing his track record. Okay, maybe he was a SEAL or something like that. And just to preface this, I really have deep respect for servicemen and women. My whole family is government servicemen and women. And there is a constitutional obligation. And when people sign up for that, you know, that's huge. So it's not about that. But geez Louise, when will we understand that this is the biggest scam in the world? And I hate to say it, but it is a complete fractal of Iraq, from Afghanistan to Iran. It's all about access to the region. It's all about oil. It's what it's all about all over again. It has nothing to do with Taliban other than, you know, getting the Taliban out of the way, who, of course, depleted the poppy fields down to almost zero production. The coalition forces come in, and now we're up at 125%, so we can ship drugs over to the West and continue to fuel Wall Street.
Okay, well, McChrystal is a West Point grad, commissioned as second lieutenant around 76. Then he was...
He was Special Forces.
Special Forces, okay.
Yes, Special Ops or whatever. Okay, so, but that doesn't mean you know how to win a war. That means you know how to kill people.
He went to South Korea.
Ooh, the stream
75th Rangers. It's a high-end fighter, that's for sure.
Yeah, a fighter, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's a strategic war winner. And by the way, what constitutes winning in Afghanistan? What when we win, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, I know it's the same thing with Iraq. Who are we beating? I mean, does somebody come over and do we sign up some papers on a train, on a ship? I mean, there's nobody that can surrender. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And it looks like the Obama is going to do another surge type deal.
Yeah, well, that's what this debate's all about.
Oh, really?
I'm still looking over this McChrystal stuff. I'm not seeing that...
That he was a big war-winning general?
He was criticized for his role in the aftermath of the 2004 death. This is the one where Pat Tillman was killed. He lied about it, apparently. He said that Tillman was killed in a line of devastating enemy fire, which was not to be the case. It was friendly fire. So now we have a guy that's not even, you can't even trust him right there. Boom. So why does anything he say, have any validity?
All right. U.S. BBC reports, U.S. dismisses Afghan surge report. The White House has denied reports that U.S. President Barack Obama may soon announce a substantial increase in U.S. troops to Afghanistan. You want to hear Robert Gibbs, that douchebag? Want to hear what he has to say about
it? Oh, I love Robert Gibbs. He's my favorite.
He's funny to listen to. It's a short clip.
He's so snidey, actually.
The veracity of that report.
I wouldn't... The president has not made a decision, and when he does, I think you can assume that the BBC will not be the first outlet for such a decision. I would not put any throw weight behind the fact that a decision has been made when the president has yet to make a decision.
Does the president actually make that decision? Doesn't Congress make the decision?
Well, it's a war decision, so it's supposed to be Congress, but I think that the Congress doesn't care. And yeah. Besides that, they should go along with anything he says.
Yeah, Gordon Brown pledged 500 more forces for Afghanistan. That's
how many?
500.
Huh.
Yeah. And he said it's all, you know, it's all very important. This is right in line with the strategy. So apparently the UK strategy is different from the US strategy. Or it's just a setup, you know, to say the strategy is right and the strategy calls for more troops. And then Obama can say, well, our partners are doing it. We have to do it as well. And
yeah, there's some. So I'm going to get off this wiki page. I'm sorry, but I was looking at somebody's going to have to. I don't know why it's not in the wiki, but supposedly Stanley A. McChrystal won a Bronze Star, and there's no mention of what for.
Well, it was to fill up an empty spot on his uniform.
Mm.
There's an interesting report in the Times, the UK Times, that. The French, there were 10 French troops who were killed, I think a couple weeks ago, when they walked into they took over from the Italians in the Sarobi area, east of Kabul. And this was supposed to be a very, very calm, very serene area. And the French come in, it was their turn to take over that particular region. And boom, you know, 10 guys get killed. And this report now states that the Italian Secret Service was paying thousands and thousands of dollars to the Taliban commanders and local warlords to keep the area calm. But they neglected to tell the French this. So the French went in, didn't know where to drop the black bag or where to place the envelope. And the warlords are like, hey, I'm going to take you out. Because the Italians, the Italians are just paying them off and drinking wine all day.
Cool.
I mean, it's a fantastic article. It'll be in the show notes, but it's
yeah,
just,
definitely have to read that one.
It's like, whoa. I mean, and there's a lot, and there's been a lot of reports about buying off of warlords, and you know, but there's just no one really aggregating it all up into one real concise story. And
now the whole thing is a fiasco.
It really is. It really, really is. But not just it's so disappointing, and in a way, it's upsetting. It's like, don't we see what's going on? Don't we? Why can't we see that? You know, probably because all we hear is current threat level is orange. I was talking about this with Mickey last night, you know, and because she also was starting to get really irritated about, you know, the TSA stuff, and she's totally slipping over to the dark side, John, which is kind of cool. and she says, but you know, well, of course we don't want terrorists. I said, well, let me ask you this: in Madrid, where were people killed by terrorists? And she said, on the train. I said, in London, where were people killed by terrorists? She said, on the subway and in buses. So, well, how come the terrorists who are apparently out to kill Americans only target airplanes? We got plenty of trains. We got buses. How come there's no security there? Because it's bullshit.
Well, for a group of that's out to kill Americans, it seems that they're the number of attacks that they've made on our shores is pretty low. I mean, although we do catch, you know, these idiots like that guy in Dallas, of course, that was going to blow up a building. But the guy was obviously a subpar moron who, you know, somebody targeted. I mean, and I think you can probably do this with a lot of these guys. You find somebody with a really low IQ. And this is part of course, you got to get the Patriot Act repassed. And so what you got to do is you have to have a few incidents. So they arrest that one guy out of Denver. Then they found some guy plotting against something in Chicago, coincidentally.
Yes.
And then they had this moron down in Dallas, Fort Worth area that was going to blow up this building. So they found some guy who is going to be his handler and, you know, who's a government agent. And essentially the government agent does everything. He buys him the bombs. He gets him, you know, he sets him up. He gets him all jacked up. Come on, buddy. We can do it. We can blow this place up. Yeah. And the guy says, yeah, okay, duh. And the guy's an obvious... Yeah. You know, probably an IQ of 80, and he gets him to the point where they planted this phony bomb, and then he has him push the button like he's going to blow it up. Okay, you get to blow it up. Here's the button trigger. Here, take and push it. Ready? One, two, three, push.
Oh, it didn't work. Oh.
Boom, didn't work. Boom, you're under arrest.
Yeah.
And it's as though this would have happened if it wasn't for the other guy who's the American, the government guy that was doing all the heavy lifting. If you want to just grab people like that, there's a bunch of big talkers in the United States. Anyone who's ever been amongst the working class, who's been in a factory or anything, there are so many blowhards in this country that it's not hard to find one and then sucker him into doing something he probably wouldn't have done in a million years. And this is probably, some of the worst kind of entrapment. I'm not saying this guy should be out roaming around. He's probably a dummy that should be locked up, but that's beside the point. I mean, you saw it with John DeLorean when he had his car company. This was back in the 70s, I believe, where, he was losing money and some government guy came up with this idea to talk him into, let's get into the cocaine business. It's a real problem. I've been in it all my life. To ride this guy right into the sewer when he probably wouldn't have done it on his own, I think is abhorrent. And that's what we just kind of make people criminals. I don't see why we're making people criminals.
Meanwhile, if you connect the dots, you will not hear this on Fox News or on your beloved CNN. President Obama has consistently said that he did not want to make a decision about more troops in Afghanistan until the elections were finalized. Now, the elections, this is Karzai, the guy who is co-owner or his brother has all these whole huge restaurant chain in the U.S. He owns the Toyota factory in Afghanistan. He owns everything. He's like the true warlord of business over there. And Karzai, of course, is a shill, worked for UNESCO, was put in there to kind of manage the region. And so we're waiting for, they had this election. It's like there's been no real results. And it's like maybe there was some fraud. And now the UN official in Afghanistan Sunday acknowledged widespread fraud in the disputed presidential election and is rejecting allegations from a former deputy that he covered up the cheating to smooth the path to victory for President Hamid Karzai. Now, where do you think this UN official is from, John?
I don't know. You tell me.
From Norway. Kai Elde.
So you've got Norway in some grand scheme plot.
I'm telling you, Norway and Chicago, there's
Norway,
something going
on
there.
It's the Norway-Chicago-Obama axis.
I'm telling you, it's the axis of Norwegian evil. Remarks by Norwegian diplomat Kai Elde appeared designed to win back respect for both the troubled UN mission and the entire election process ahead of a ruling by investigators on whether fraud was extensive enough in August, the August 20th balloting to require a runoff. So here's a guy who was supposed to make sure that, there was no fraud, and he tried to cover it up.
Maybe the Norwegians, are so sick of making money from oil that they're looking for this drug connection. Maybe the Norwegians are supplying all the drugs to Chicago.
Yeah, maybe they're just trying to expand their business.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah. But these things, you'll never hear about this. I consider this to be pretty big. that's like...
Nobody cares.
It's not insignificant, There's definitely something to it.
Nah.
What am I talking about?
Just take your shoes off. Put them in the bin. Don't put them in the bin. Put them in the bin. Don't put them in the bin.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do. And maybe that's a part of it. Maybe they do it on purpose to confuse your ass.
Well, that was something somebody sent us, that CNN ad. Did you read the, we have one of our producers is a hypnotist.
Oh yeah, I did.
And
I
he found an ad that CNN uses, which is an ad designed to confuse the brain.
Oh, that's where they have it. Was the CNN ad? Yeah, I do have that. Hold on.
Yeah, confuse the brain, and then they hit you with a suggestion. I found it fascinating, and I believe that we need to do a couple. And I think I can reproduce the style of that ad and make a no agenda ad, which will help maybe get us more contributions.
Would you like me to see if I can pull that ad up for a second?
Yeah, it's in his email.
Why don't you
Why don't I kill some time?
Yeah, kill some
talking
time
about
while
your containment. I was telling the people while you were gone about your containment cell and the fact that I believe that in San Francisco, all these lofts that are being built, and they all have the same basic style. The windows are off the ground. They're brick. They're made out of brick. Not regular brick, but this kind of prison brick. And all you need to do is just put the some bars on the windows, and you'll find that most of these lofts in San Francisco could easily be minimum security prisons. And I think I'm almost convinced that they were designed with that in mind. And you're in one of them, and that's what I pointed out to you. And it even has the elevator where they can beat you up. I mean, it's just amazing. It's just a classic prison situation.
Okay, I got it here. This is actually, you blogged this. It's coming from your blog. So this is an Anderson Cooper 360, or as we say, AC 360. And it's, well, listen to it. I hope it'll, because YouTube sometimes doesn't do stereo. So let's see if it'll.
I don't think I don't think it has to be in stereo to work.
You know, I disagree. I think what you hear through left ear and through right ear has profound different effects.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, you know, the right ear goes to the left brain and left ear goes to the right brain, and those brain halves do have different functions. Well, let's hear what it sounds
I'm
like.
I'm a lifelong Democrat. The issue that matters most to me is the economy. Security. Unfortunately, a many lot of the politicians running the government are almost impossible to trust sometimes. That's why I watch Anderson Cooper 360 on CNN.
Every weeknight at 10, AC 360 brings you the news from different perspectives.
I really like keeping them honest, because whenever one of those right-wing politicians plays with the facts, they're held accountable.
AC 360, weeknights at 10, only on CNN.
It's what Alex Jones would describe as the left-right paradigm, which is why I find the actual separation of channels an interesting concept, because you literally are talking about left and right. And wouldn't it be interesting, and you have to get the original, John, and see if you can find out what's playing on white on which channel, because if the woman who says left actually appears in your right ear and the man who says right appears in your left ear, there's something to that. That is not unimportant.
Yeah, it might be, because you have a left brain that has a certain mentality and the right brain has a different one. So you could kind of appeal to both of them through the different ears and then consolidate your message at the end. So you have like confusion. The way it was described is you have confusion, and then the brain is going, I don't know what to do. Yeah. And then consolidation, where at the end the information's identical.
But speaking of CNN, and this was a fabulous report that came out, which I think is something that's very important for our audience, our producers. Women who perform the act of fellatio and swallow semen on a regular basis 1 to 2 times a week may reduce their risk of breast cancer by up to 40%.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a hoax, you know.
Yeah, from the Associated Press?
It was never an Associated Press story.
It says right here, it's an AP story.
It's what it says.
And it's on CNN.com.
I know that began as a hoax and somehow got into the mainstream.
And it's from a study from the North Carolina State University. It's just, if it really is a hoax, that's great, because you can just say something's from the North Carolina State University and get your shit on AP and CNN. And apparently they studied over 15,000 women. John, I think we have to test this theory. I think we need to get a few of our, we have like 9 female listeners.
We need to we're actually up to 13.
We need to study them over the course of a few years to see if this is actually true. This is for science, John. We cannot just overlook these things.
Yeah, for validation.
Validation purposes.
So I guess this is as good a moment as any for the PPOD.
Okay, everybody, it's time.
John C. Dvorak's pet peeve of the day.
Okay, here's the deal. This actually got to me a couple of weeks ago, and then I heard this ad.
With Ragu, you can give your kids veggies they'll actually eat. Ragu has more than a full serving of veggies in every half cup. So give them a good start with all natural Ragu. Feed our kids well.
Veggies? When did veggies become like a mainstream term? Oh, veggies. What is it? Are these people 6 years old? You know, I start seeing this word veggies cropping up, and you hear all the vegans all say, oh, veggies, veggies. Oh, I've got my veggies. And I saw what really got to me was on Yelp. They used to, you see these, oh, the veggies are really good. What veggies? What's veggies? I don't get what veggies is. It's like somebody saying, what do you like to eat? I like to eat meat. It doesn't mean anything. But the term veggies is so kind of like third grade that it just galls me. It just irks me to hear grown women say veggies. And then when I heard this commercial, it just took me over the top. And by the way, also when you do a Yelp post, there's a little, I think you can say a little more than the word yum to describe the meal.
Is that it?
Yep.
John C. Dvorak's pet peeve of the day.
It's a part of the dumbing down of the masses, John. It's so incredibly clear. It's just meant to make us stupid.
We're stupid, apparently. Veggies head.
Veggies. Yeah, and it's in ragu, which sounds pretty ominous.
Full serving, whatever that means. I guess they're counting tomatoes as veggies when, in fact, they're fruit.
Speaking of commercials, John Gonatis, I think is how you pronounce it, one of our producers, says you might want to take a look at the new format for drug ads on Hulu. He said, and I don't watch Hulu because maybe I should to watch some of the
drama. Did you have a real
series.
TV?
Yeah, I got a television, and I tried to keep that off. It's much safer. He says, last night when he was watching Cops to improve his taser avoidance techniques, he saw for the first time, this is one I love our listeners, he saw for the first time one of these new ads, and it includes a screenshot, he included a screenshot of it, but the spot is a minute 15, so it's that new format, of which 50 seconds is the all the disclaimer. So you get like
six, 15 seconds is the sales pitch. I'm finished.
50. So this was
20, 5. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, 20 seconds was, or 25 seconds was actual commercial, and the remainder of the time
that's
was,
a long commercial.
Yeah, well, it's one of those new minute 15 things. But there now also has on the Hulu ad, they have a scroll bar that actually now gives you the text of all of the negative effects of the commercial.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Including right upper belly pain. I love that. Yeah, I thought that was that's pretty interesting. So Hulu's going to make a bundle off of that. Really? I got to credit them for that.
There are only two countries in the world that allow this sort of advertising. It's banned, and it used to be banned in the United States, but now the United States and New Zealand, of all places, are the two countries in the world that allow this sort of really onerous drug company advertising to get people to hound their doctor. When I saw it on TV, is it right for me? Is it right for me?
So here's what some financial analysts are saying about the pharmaceutical industry. Pharmaceuticals have shown their defensive colors in the downturn, with no sign yet of late cycle hit to revenues. Here's a UBS analyst. Our initial view was that we would see something by the third quarter, but it's starting to feel like that's not going to happen. In other words, a downturn. In fact, drug sales are now expected to grow by 4.5% to 5.5% this year in the all-important U.S. market, according to IMS Health, the leading tracker.
All-important, drugged-up U.S.
All
market.
All-important. It's very, very important. Only 6 months ago, IMS was predicting a 1% to 2% fall. And, here, Credit Suisse analyst Catherine Arnold said the average price increase for major U.S. drug companies in the third quarter was 8.7%. So they're going gangbusters. Gangbusters, I tell you. And you wonder why.
Well, you make the public sick.
Yes.
You know, you scare them to death with swine flu crap. You make them sick with lousy food and, you know, veggies. And the next thing you know, they're ill and they need to take drugs.
Well, you don't even need to take drugs, but yeah.
Sold a bill of goods about the drugs. They got a million commercials.
Yeah,
we play them all the time, and it's just like, why do you need this drug? I mean, they're like, you know, the restless leg syndrome drug is a classic. Who develops these things?
Yeah.
Well, drug companies. And
yeah, but I mean, I just like, well, look, I think I got a theory here about we can make this drug for restless leg syndrome. And there's this many people, and I can imagine the meetings. You know what the meetings are like. You're a meeting guy. They go into there, and they got the whiteboard, and they're showing the numbers of people that have restless leg syndrome and how much money they can make per pill, because it'd be $10 a pill. And then they say, well, how many people can we convince have restless leg syndrome? And holy mackerel, look at the size of that market. All right, let's do it.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., what is his position in government?
He is a representative of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Okay, so he's not a he's not somewhere
well,
in
office?
Well,
I don't know. Well, let's look him up on Wikipedia. Maybe he got in somewhere.
Well, because you mentioned the meeting, and he has been standing outside, I guess, the Capitol. I'm waiting for this page to load. And he is all over this secret meeting that the vaccine producers had, an off-site meeting known as an off-site. And they had this meeting where they actually discussed how to cover up the fact that the minute traces of mercury in vaccinations, not necessarily the H1N1, but that they knew that they know that it causes autism. And I'm going to play you a little bit of this because it's pretty compelling stuff, and you have to watch it. I'll put the link in the show notes.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to see all of you out here today, finally telling the truth to this Congress, which needs to hear the truth for the first time. The government scientists are acknowledging that even tiny infinitesimal amounts of mercury, parts per billion, will cause profound neurological injury in children. And I was working on these issues, and mothers started coming up to me and said, you know, the biggest exposure is not coming from power plants or old mining claims, as you might think. It's coming from our own vaccines. And they asked me to work on it and to look into it. And they were not hysterical people. They were scientists. They were doctors. They were psychiatrists. They were pharmacists. They were people who had their feet on the ground. They had attended the conferences. They had read the scientific literature. They had calmly and deliberately gone through this, and they had reached a conclusion. And the conclusion was that the vaccines were destroying the health, were making the sickest generation of American children in the history of our country.
Now listen to the shit about the meeting.
And I started looking into it, and somebody provided me with the Simpson Wood Memo.
Google that, John. Simpson Wood Memo.
Which I then published in Rolling Stone. And Simpson Wood was the transcripts of a secret meeting that was held between CDC and 75 representatives of the vaccine industry, in which they reviewed a report that CDC had ordered, the Verstraten study, of the 100,000 children in the United States Vaccine Safety Database. And when they looked at it themselves, they said, it is impossible, this is a quote, to massage this data to make the signal go away.
I think I see a little red laser dot on his forehead while he's speaking. it's a little unclear in the video. It's a great speech he does, and he's really out there. And this Simpson Woods memo is interesting stuff. The CDC colluded with 75 vaccine manufacturers how to cover this up. You know, and then you get people like, was it Jenny McCarthy, who's married to Jim Carrey, and they have a kid with autism, and then, you know, and then she's trying to get the message out saying, hey, we're giving our kids 28 vaccines before they're 18 months old. You know, the logic points to some issues here, and then, you know, just Google Jenny McCarthy and
yeah, no,
nutcase.
Jenny McCarthy's about making a big, a lot of noise about this.
Yeah, but she,
but you know, they got her marginalized as a crackpot.
That's what I'm saying. Google nutcase or crackpot and Jenny McCarthy, and she's it. You know, she's crazy. It's good stuff, though. I have no idea what.
Well, I'm sure that you know with Kennedy, you know, he's a do-gooder.
Yep.
and a sincere one. I mean, I think he's wrong about a lot of stuff I've heard him talk about, but and he's very socialist. But he is thorough and a good troublemaker. He's because he has all kinds of creds. And if he's looking into this, this is going to be interesting to see how that works out, because that's a little more that they're going to have a trouble tarring him with the Jenny McCarthy crackpot paintbrush.
Well, particularly when you read this memo. You know, this memo about the meeting that they held off-site, they held it off-site specifically because then they thought they would be immune from a Freedom of Information Act request.
And so did you see they have like three or four or five of these different swine flu vaccines?
What?
and they had all these different manufacturers. Listen, I wish I had this little article in front of me.
Hold on one second, John. It's the No Agenda Swine Flu Minute. Yeah.
So they have these, you know, the SmithKline, all these different Glaxo, all these different companies that make the swine flu. And then they said, and they have one batch of it that is the only one that is the mercury free, and it has and no adjuvants and mercury free. And who do you think was the manufacturer of that one?
Let me. Could it be Baxter?
Yeah, I just cracked up.
You got to send me that link. We're going to put that in the show notes. Baxter, who, of course, actually tried to kill people by spreading the live vaccine and got away with it, and their stock price is through the roof.
Yeah. But they make the good stuff, apparently.
Yeah. They make the good. Well, there was another link. Hold on. Here it is. San Jose Mercury News. Headline, U.S. could potentially use controversial adjuvants in swine flu vaccine. So, of course, we've been promised that no adjuvants would be put in, but it's very simple to see how the strategy is going to work. Oh, we don't have enough vaccine. People are getting sick. People are dying. We have, oh, my gosh, in Oklahoma, there's children are dropping dead on the streets. Cue up that old video again of the three kids.
Yeah, the Oklahoma video.
So the World Health Organization estimates that a worldwide production capacity of 3 billion doses. John, we are such... I mean, I want to apologize to the listeners where I said you should invest in gold. I'm sorry. You should have, of course, completely invested in these pharmaceutical companies. 3 billion doses of pandemic H1N1 vaccine will be used to prevent the outbreak and spread of the 2009 H1N1 flu or swine flu. This ambitious plan for widespread vaccine, albeit inadequate for a total population of 6.8 billion people, has drawn criticism regarding the vaccine's safety. So here's the strategy. Oh my gosh, it's working so well, but people who don't have it don't have access to the vaccine. They don't have access. They're dying. We only have one way to go. We can't produce it fast enough. John, do you have an idea? Do you have a solution?
We use lots of weird adjuvants.
The hamburger helper of the vaccine industry.
You know what's going to happen here? Because there's already been a number of huge populations that have said, look, we don't want the stupid shot. And the thing that's interesting about it is that, you know, the swine flu came up last year, and there's always this thing about, well, you know, it unlike every other flu, for some unknown reason, it doesn't go away. Even though the 1918 flu did, it had a 2-year life cycle. So what you're going to run into is, I think there's going to be another round of applause for this H1N1 next year. I can almost assure you of this. We can make a note, put the dot on this show.
And
by this time next year, the thing will be coming around again in a more virulent form, and we're going to have, and apparently not everybody got their shots last year, and we've got this, because they got to get rid of these shots. I mean, you don't make, 3-4 billion, copies of this flu to be distributed and only sell half of it. You what are you gonna do with the rest of it? Throw in the ocean?
I mean,
you're
gonna have to. Yeah.
You're gonna need to shoot it up, next year. So this one's going around, and that's of course what you need the Thermosil in there for, because it needs to preserve it for a year.
This is a good article that's in Mercury News. And, of course, that'll be in the show notes at noagendashow.com. In testimony before Congress in 2001, the FDA needed to make a decision on the safety of adjuvants so manufacturers could know whether they could include them in vaccines or not. Quote, it seems that the FDA and the manufacturers have been waiting for a pandemic to solve the problem for them. It was going to be the avian flu. And this is testimony before Congress.
No, you know, we discussed this, I think, like 4 or 5 months ago with this exact same thesis.
Yeah. An adjuvanted vaccine for H5N1 avian flu was approved in many countries, but the disease never spread person to person. Damn, drat. Back to the drawing board. Baxter, can you guys hook us up? So then swine flu came along. Glaxo Novartis got another bite of the cherry. And, of course, once the adjuvants get into licensed products in the U.S., they'll become part of all sorts of novel vaccines for cancer and non-infectious diseases. They're just waiting to roll this shit out. It's a huge rollout.
They really want to. I mean, we said this before when the whole swine flu thing began, which was this is a scam of some sort, and the adjuvant part of it seems to be one of the elements. And the fact that, you know, and the coincidence that all of a sudden Baxter's sending out regular vaccines with H5N1 in them, which would have triggered the
it was H1N1.
No, it was H5N1. I'm sure it was, wasn't it? No. It was bird flu.
Irrelevant.
Well, besides the point, they were trying to get something spreading, we feel, even though, no, it was an accident. And, you know, we'll take their word for it. There was no way that they could possibly be doing that. So that's what we stick by, although we don't believe it.
Just wanted to close it off.
It's probably best.
So one more little piece of outrage, which you will not hear about because, of course, we're too busy talking about. Are we still talking about the Nobel Peace Prize, or is it time for another? Isn't it time for another distraction? We need another one. We need something to distract from what's happening right now.
Well, let's see. Britney Spears is out of the picture, so that's no good. Now, Kate plus 8, I think, has lost it. I think they've lost their momentum.
Yeah.
And
Top Chef is doing pretty good, though.
Yeah, I don't watch it.
No one is talking about it, but it's happening. AIG is about to hand out another round of bonuses, which averages out to about $50,000 per person in the company. And even the lunch lady is getting a $7,000 bonus. And, of course, these are retention bonuses. And, you know, you can't have the lunch lady leaving the company.
What would you do?
Yeah.
Because it's so hard, you know.
It's so hard to get lunch ladies.
You can't find anyone to hire because there's nobody unemployed amongst the 20%.
No. So while this is happening, court documents... and this is about the previous round of bullshit bonuses. Oh, crap. My browser just bricked. Court documents are showing that Bernanke and Paulson knew about the bonuses before they forced Merrill Lynch to be acquired by Bank of America. Hmm. And they lied about this.
These people should be fired.
They should be thrown in jail. They lied about it. Here, court documents show that federal regulators were told about billions of dollars in bonuses awarded to Merrill Lynch executives during the company's takeover by Bank of America, contradicting statements by Congress, by Federal Reserve Chairman Ben S. Bernanke, and former Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson Jr. They knew about the bonuses before. So that they knew it on December 17th, weeks before the government approved the $20 billion bailout. And then, of course, when those bonuses happened, and no one's given the bonuses back. Remember, they were supposed to give the bonuses back? No one's given the bonuses back. It's all reported in mainstream news. It'll be in the show notes at noagendashow.com.
Nobody seems to be outraged by anything.
No, but now they're about to do another round of bonuses.
Why not?
It's just...
I would.
But how come no one's angry?
I'd be glad if I was running one of these companies and I'm looking around and looking at all these people, you know, scattering around, you know, worried about their shoes in a bin and all the rest of it. I'd be taking all the money and passing it amongst all my buddies and then buying yachts and boats and trips to Europe and I'd have a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Nobody cares. Nobody seems to care. They don't want to. They don't want to do anything about looking at the books of the Fed, because heaven forbid anyone do that. Yeah. God knows why. I mean, what are they trying to hide? That's what
nothing.
I.
Nothing. No.
Now it's becoming mysterious.
Yeah. Our friend Slick Willie Brown said something very interesting on October 11th, as he was being interviewed. Would you like to hear another?
He's been dropping little bombs here and there. It's amusing.
Well, he dropped a rather familiar bomb.
Package, which hasn't been spent yet. I think maybe only about 20% of it has been spent. I would be doing jobs.
jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
He either listens to our show or he
probably does. Like, hey, let me give Adam and John a little plug. They'll dig it. It'll be really funny.
Jobs.
It'll be really, really funny. We have an international police force set up. Interpol and the United Nations are now becoming partners in fighting crime by jointly grooming a global police force that will be deployed as peacekeepers amongst rogue nations riven by war and organized crime. Hey, we should have them here.
Yeah, definitely. They should be in Chicago as we speak.
Yeah. On Monday, justice and foreign ministers from more than 60 countries, including the United States and China, are gathering in Singapore for a meeting hosted by the two international organizations, again, the UN and Interpol, the first step towards creating what Interpol calls a global police doctrine. This is it. This is what we've been talking about for 2 years. 2 years. And here it is, your global police force. We've got the global finance, which the G20 is going to determine how all the central banks work together. But a global police force, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy your shopping experience. Now shut up and sit down.
A global police force. That's a good one. This is all a money grab.
Yeah, I think it's a little more than a money grab.
Well, power grab, too, I suppose.
And this is weird from the Washington Times, and I've been following a couple of kind of weird stories. But, you know, there was also this United Nations, I think it was a UN report about the atrocities that went on during the most recent conflict between Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza, where both sides really overstep the boundaries of all rules of killing people. Because, you know, you can't kill people in a certain way. You can only kill them with, like, a clean shot to the head, preferably two. So this UN report accused the Jewish state of Israel and the Palestinian state of targeting its civilians in illegal ways. And now Israel, in the Knesset, is seriously considering restricting travel to Europe by senior officials and military officers, fearing they might be arrested for war crimes.
Yeah. Well, this is a problem Cheney has, by the way.
Yeah, where is he hiding out?
I think he's in the Batcave.
Yeah. Okay. I want to send you a link that you just have to take a look at. If you want to know, because otherwise we can't discuss it properly.
While you're doing that, we have to do a little call back here to Stanley McChrystal. I just want to read a couple of paragraphs from the Free Republic about McChrystal. He stopped the practice of flying flags at half-mast every time a soldier was killed, saying a force that's fighting a war can't spend all its time looking back at what the costs have been. His approach to challenge the standard military culture of overwhelming the enemy with superior firepower, sometimes regardless of the consequences. He has told his men to think before they shoot. In August, he angered Germany by apologizing for an airstrike on two hijacked NATO fuel trucks. The strike called in by the German contingent had killed 90 people. This compassion was a long way from the reputation McChrystal had enjoyed as America's ruthless chief terrorist pursuer, caught up in a scandal over torture and prisoner abuse. He was apparently somehow...
This guy is no good.
His transformation, here's the quote that or the quote from the piece I wanted to read. This came from the Times Online in the UK, by the way. His and requoted in the Free Republic. His transformation into a, quote, scholar soldier is perhaps one of the greatest achievements in a remarkable career.
Yeah, really. Oh, hold on.
And apparently his biggest fan is Bill O'Reilly.
Hold on, John. We're breaking up. Let me just see if I can fix this. It's an audio thingy. Hold on.
His biggest fan is Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, you know you're on top then. Hold on, let me see if I can fix this. Okay, yeah, it fixed. I think it fixed. Oh, wow, what's going on?
It sounds like lightning over there.
Yeah, it's like bits breaking up, but it's something internal. I don't know. I just sent you a link. And if you want to know what is actually killing our children, look at this latest ad from Ralph Lauren. And this was distributed...
Yeah, I remember this.
This was...
Yes, somebody... it's a photoshopped ad.
But I think it was actually distributed, wasn't it?
Yeah, I am not sure. I can't tell whether this was a hoax. And I have never gotten to the bottom of the story. And this woman, you know, is complaining. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with this picture. We'll just put in the show notes and let people comment on it, and we can. It just says Ralph Lauren, and then it got some woman
whose head is bigger than her pelvis.
Whose head is bigger than her waist, yeah. Because they've shrunk her. They've photoshopped her so she's like thin as a rail, and minimally. And it seems somewhat pointless.
Yeah,
but and now everybody's up in arms about it.
Well, yeah, but it's killing our kids. You know,
this model, who is 120 pounds and 5'10", says she decided to go public after she saw the Photoshop ravaged frame. 5'10", 120 is thin.
It is.
And she was fired for being too fat. I don't believe this. I think there's something wrong with the story. I think there's a missing piece to the puzzle. She maybe was fired for other reasons. Who knows?
Hmm.
But being 5'10 and 120 is, I don't know. If there's any models that listen to the show, ha, but there might be. Give us the current stats on what's expected. I know it used to be 5'8, 105 used to be some, you run into that, but 5'10, you can carry 120 and look and still be thin as a rail.
So
that I care.
Before we get to our producer credits for today's show, John, I just wanted to open up discussion with you about what's really going on with Russia, with Iran, and China, and the U.S. Of course, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was in Russia the other day, and she's not just there to check out the borscht, okay? There's reasons why these people travel to those countries.
As much as she likes borscht.
As much as she's totally into that shit. As she said, I'm so into that shit. Gazprom, of course, just closed a $25 billion deal with China to deliver gas to them. And this is where Iran comes into play. Because, of course, you know, I think we can learn from a little bit of history that the whole idea, you know, now it's, they're not calling it weapons of mass destruction, but they're calling it nuclear devices. And that Iran is going to blow us up, and they're going to blow up Israel, and they're going to nuke everybody, and we have to stop them, and we have to sanction them, and all this crap that's going on. The Russians are basically saying, I don't think so, because we're actually like doing some pretty good business, and you know, and we want to kind of keep things kind of cool. But who needs the Iranian? You know, Iran, by the way, has the world's largest natural gas reserves. Estimated 991 trillion cubic feet. And who needs that? Who needs that, John? The Europeans need it.
Yeah, the Europeans do need it.
They need it desperately. And there's actually a shift going on. I'm seeing it in all the newspapers. Now that oil is above 70 bucks, it's, what is it, 73, 75, somewhere in that region. At an all-time low at the moment, gas. Natural gas is at an all-time low. And I think that what's really going to happen is a lot of countries are desperately trying to switch to natural gas because it's just that much cheaper. And let's face it, in the United States, we got tons of natural gas. We wouldn't need anything from anybody. We could completely be self-sustainable, I think.
We got a lot of natural gas, and we keep discovering more. We actually have a lot of oil too that hasn't been tapped. There's a thing underneath North Dakota. There's a series of oil deposits that is almost as big as Saudi Arabia that hasn't even been touched.
So let's put the pieces on the board.
It's undeniable now, and there are just too many really serious reports coming out that the oil trade is now being switched to euros and the yuan and baskets of currencies that include gold. I mean, everyone's talking about it, no matter how much, you know, Gibbs stands up on the podium and denies that it's happening. You know, everyone's switching to stronger currencies.
By the way, does Gibbs seem coked up to you?
Totally. Maybe he's on E. Sometimes he looked like he's on an MDMA trip, but
he has a kind of a voice, you know, that's not breathing through his nose a lot of the time, mm-hmm. and when he talks, and there's nothing coming out of the nose thing, and so he has got that kind of a sound. You know what I'm saying?
We should totally pay attention to that. We should look if he's doing some nose touching. I'll make that my mission for this week. So Iran is becoming incredibly important. Meanwhile, in the U.S., if we actually want to switch to building this whole new gas infrastructure, we need to finance it. We really need to finance it. And who's going to do that? That's typically China, who aren't financing it anymore. So we're kind of in this race, I think, somehow, for the U.S. to switch to natural gas, since our currency is, you know, not even slowly, but moderately quickly becoming no longer the reserve currency of the world. That's the euro, which, by the way, is not all that good for Europe. That has its own implications and problems.
Well, I've always believed that. I thought this was going to happen the last time the dollar folded. And then if you remember that about a year or so, a couple of years ago, when all of a sudden the pound fell like a rock and the euro was falling really fast and the dollar was picking up steam. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, boom, it turned right back around. The dollar's in the toilet. The euro is $1.47, $1.50. That means you have to pay 50% more for stuff in Europe. It's ridiculous. And then the pound is kind of holding its own about $1.60. And so the dollar started collapsing again, and we're supposed to have a strong dollar policy. How about this for an interesting scenario? The world changes. The dollar keeps kind of declining, and it looks weak and weak and weak. And so I said, well, screw the dollar. We're losing our butts being in this thing. Let's switch over to the euro, buy high, sell low. Switch over to the euro and then do all these contracts in euros with the oil. So let's say that you buy X amount for 2 euros, and then all of a sudden, once that's all established, the dollar skyrockets in value because you can turn it up and down through different kinds of policies. And the next thing you know, we're getting our oil at half price because it's all, well, I'm sorry if you wanted to be with the euro. And then we end up getting a really good deal. The economy gets cranked up again and we're back on top. And then everybody realizes that we've screwed the world financially once more, which we're really good at, by the way. And I have lots of confidence that we can do that kind of thing.
And by the way, I'd just like to point out, when you hear all this great talk about a jobless recovery, which is such a dichotomy.
It's ludicrous.
A jobless recovery, because the Dow is at 10,000. Yeah, but if you calculate the dollar value, the Dow is really like it's 7,500. It's, you know, it's not the same 10,000 as it was 2 years ago. It's a different 10,000 because the dollar is just worth that much less.
Still beside the point. This thing is overpriced. But the jobless recovery thing is just – and they keep talking about it as if it was a good thing.
It's a meme. Yeah, just trying – hey, it's good. Hey, our economy's recovered. Too bad you can't eat, motherfucker. The U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission just stated at the World Gas Conference in Buenos Aires – that the U.S. may never need new coal or nuclear plants ever again, based upon our potential switch to natural gas. And by the way, cars run on that too. You know, it's good stuff. You can do a lot with it, and I think it's pretty clean. John, am I wrong?
No, it's an outstanding product.
In fact,
you could actually light your house with it. I mean, they used to, as a matter of fact, years ago, before electricity.
Everything was lamps. Yeah,
have a little gas lamp in the house.
So this is the kind of stuff that we consistently look into. So we have a couple of things that we have to do this week. I will be watching a lot of C-SPAN, C-SPAN 3, which is only online, by the way. Watching all of Robert Gibbs' presentations to see if he's coked out or not, and I actually take that on as a challenge. He sounds that way, and, you know, just considering his job, he might be.
But we spend a lot of time looking into this stuff. John does a whole nother show with Andrew Horowitz that talks specifically about the markets and the economy and how the money flows are going. And the type of analysis we're giving you, even if it's not true, the Norwegian-Chicago connection, I think it's it's worth more investigation. I'll keep on that. We do the work. We do the work, and we don't let ourselves get interrupted by stupid-ass commercials, let ourselves be limited by not being able to talk about certain things that would piss off advertisers. And the only way we can keep doing it is by you donating to the show. It's just like PBS, only we're not corrupt.
Right, and we don't, you know, necessarily. Well, we don't. We don't have any underwriters or anybody that, you know, can tell us what we can or cannot say. In fact, let me go over this. We didn't actually get a lot of money in this last week. I'm kind of disappointed, but we did have some enough to get by. Let me name a few people. John Traynor, Wilmington, Delaware, $50. Then we had Samuel Vanderplank. We didn't get much overseas money. In fact, we got just one, and this is it. Samuel Vanderplank, who's in, I guess it's Leper, Belgium, L-E-P-E-R.
Gave
us $77.70, and he wanted to mention the anti-censorship thing going on in Switzerland on October 31st, and you should go to anti-censur, Z-E-N-S-U-R, Z-E-N-S-U-R.info. That's anti-censur.info, and there's something going on in Europe that we need to catch up to. Aaron Tulin gave us $50, and he wants us to mention Surly Trader, SURLY Trader.com, and he's in Lawrenceville, Georgia, and apparently us mentioning that is a wedding gift to somebody.
Oh, that's nice.
Timothy Tillman, Midlothian, Virginia, gave us $100. Kenneth Keelholtz in Hamilton, Ohio, gave us $75. And Dr. Neninger's Natural Meds in Port Jefferson, New York, gave us $51.51.
Thank you.
And then again, here we go again, Sterling Ellsworth, once again, repeats his $77.77 donation from Santa Barbara. And I've come to the conclusion that he's going to obviously do this. This is the third time. Maybe he's going to do it. I'm kind of guessing he's going to do this like seven times.
It's a hostile takeover.
He's going to do this like seven times, and then he's going to get, it's got some lucky number thing. And then he is going to go to the horse track, and go to the seventh race.
Horse number seven.
And bet on horse number seven, and you know what's going to happen?
He's going to win it all back.
It's going to come in seventh. And finally...
I love it.
Bruce you know, I had the pronunciation down and I blew it. Saccocchio, I think. It's S-A-C-C-O-C-C-I-O, which I think is Saccocchio or Saccaccio. Probably Saccaccio. That sounds right. Who gave us $77.33 to mention the fact that you mentioned $77.33 is a Masonic number.
Yes.
And he did some research and discovered that many, if not most, of the Masonic lodges, the phone number usually incorporates 7733.
Absolutely. And that's so okay. I think the Masons would actually be on our side on this show.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks, Bruce. So that's our
donor
for the week.
That's it?
Yeah, it's all we got.
I just did want to mention that besides the AIG bonuses coming out, Goldman Sachs, who of course actually were failed, and then they were allowed to turn into a regular bank and a holding bank, and they got billions of dollars and were bailed out, and they got $8 billion of the AIG bailout put directly into their coffers. They're about to hand out $20 billion in bonuses to themselves, as we are, you know. At the
how come we're not working for them?
It's our destiny, John. It is our destiny.
We could be in Paris right now sipping Beaujolais.
Hey, pretty soon I'm going to hook up that Cabernet sipping session for you, though.
What Cabernet sipping session?
With Kim Jong-il.
Oh, right. I was thinking Bordeaux. You know, it's Bordeaux. It's a blend.
I thought he had Cabernet. It was Bordeaux?
Yeah, it's Bordeaux. He's a Bordeaux nut.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was Cab. Well, I'm glad you corrected me.
No, Cabernet. You wouldn't.
No, pff, Please. Blah. It's got to be Bordeaux. Hold on. What?
By the way, I want people to go to the dvorak.org/NA.
Hold on, John. What? Obama's at Union Square?
Yeah, Obama's at Union Square today.
What's he doing on Union Square? Is he shopping at Neiman Marcus?
No, he just... Obama came into San Francisco to disrupt traffic.
Oh, how's the traffic, darling?
By the way, is he ever in Washington anymore? Is
no, he he's not in Washington. He has nothing to do there.
And which Obama is this? Yeah. Is this the... Nikki, is this which, the gray-haired Obama
which
or the
Obama is it?
Obama?
Is it the black-haired Obama or the gray-haired Obama? Oh, she says the one with the green hair, the chia pet Obama.
Yeah, Obama's in San Francisco. Anyway, I just want to make people aware of the noagendashow.com is where they can contribute to the show. I wish you would go there immediately, or dvorak.org/.
And you know what? You know what? Why don't you give us a bonus this week? Give us a little bonus. We deserve a bonus.
There must be somebody there that works for one of these big companies that could just throw a few $1,000. They can become knights.
Yeah, you'll become a knight. You become the producer of... we can make you the executive producer of the entire show. Who was our executive producer again, John, this week?
The executive producer was Timothy Tillman.
And his contribution was?
It was 100.
So it's... And we really appreciate it.
He got in under the wire. That's rare. We don't get somebody that can beat that.
Yeah, usually it's a little bit higher. But consider giving us a bonus. I think it would be a great incentive. I'd feel really good. And otherwise, you know, I just might have to go become the sandwich lady because she's getting $7,000.
The sandwich lady.
I'm telling you.
Here's your tip, honey.
Good job. It's a retention bonus. We have to give these people bonuses because otherwise they wouldn't want to do this crappy job at AIG.
Well, we're being scammed, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, we are. So remember, you can leave your laptop in the bag and put your shoes on the belt, not in the bin.
Yeah, try that in Oakland.
And enjoy your shopping experience. Coming to you from the Minimum Containment Center Cell Crackpot Command thingy with twins. Pictures coming soon at noagendashow.com. I'm Adam Curry.
And from the northern Silicon Valley climes, which are overcast and miserable today, as a matter of fact, I'm John C. Dvorak.
And we'll talk to you again on Sunday, right here on No Agenda.